Bridgebank helps breakthrough ideas actually break through and remains dedicated to providing financial solutions to those committed to leveraging innovation to make the world a better place. Bridgebank, a division of Western Alliance Bank. Bridgebank, be bold, venture wisely.
Hey there, this is Brittany Luce from NPR's It's Been a Minute. KQED's podcasts like The Bay, Bay Curious, Mindshift, Right Nowish, and more all tell the stories of the Bay and beyond with reliable, human-centered journalism. They aim to inspire, make you think, entertain, and expand your understanding of the place you call home. Here's how you can support podcasting at KQED.
Showing your support is easy, and you can join Brittany in supporting KQED Podcast too at donate.kqed.org/podcast. That's donate.kqed.org/podcast.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Alexis Madrigal. Sickle cell anemia is a painful, painful disease that disproportionately affects Black people. Over the decades that it's been recognized by Western science, it has not received adequate funding to come up with new treatments. Patients often have very poor quality of life as they struggle with the pain that the blood disease inflicts. But a major collaboration between California academic institutions promises to use the revolutionary gene editing technology known as CRISPR to correct the genetic mutation that causes the disease. We'll talk with a patient and two doctors working on the treatment. And then we'll hear about the plight of outdoor workers who should be but often aren't protected by California labor laws. That's all next after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Sickle cell disease is a red blood cell disorder that is debilitating, painful, and leads to other medical problems like infections and strokes. It is most prevalent among Black people, and patients have struggled to access basic care. Later, we'll be joined by a sickle cell patient at UCSF who's getting a blood transfusion as we speak. But we're going to start today with two members of the team working on the new CRISPR trial. Marcia Treadwell is a psychologist at UCSF Benioff Children's Hospital, who also directs the Sickle Cell Care Coordination Initiative in Northern California. Welcome, Dr. Treadwell.
Thank you.
And Mark Walters is a professor of pediatrics at UCSF and lead scientist on the sickle cell trial. Welcome, Dr. Walters.
Thanks very much.
Dr. Walters, let's first just talk a little bit about sickle cell anemia. Can you tell us a bit more about the sort of prevalence and symptoms of the disease?
Yes, it's a hereditary disorder, which means that a person who inherits the disorder has it lifelong. And before birth, the symptoms and signs of sickle cell disease are masked by the fetal hemoglobin, which is a form of hemoglobin that's made before the birth of any baby. So for this reason, it cannot be identified at birth based on signs and symptoms or even a regular blood count at birth. So we rely on newborn screening to detect individuals, babies who've inherited the disease so that we can institute regular care. With regular care, most children will survive to adulthood. But the sad story is that even today, with a broader array of supportive measures, supportive treatments that might lessen the severity of the disease, the median survival is still, that is, half of the patients who inherited the disease will die in their late 40s and early 50s, which is a 30-year decrement in lifespan. And the reason for that is that there's progressive damage to virtually every organ in the body. Pain is the hallmark of the disease, which is caused by the fact that the sickle hemoglobin, this is the inherited dysfunctional version
of misshapen red blood cells. Yeah,
exactly. And it blocks blood flow. And when there's an absence of blood flow and oxygen, that causes pain in locations like muscle and bone.
Got it. You know, Dr. Treadwell, you direct an initiative to improve care and the quality of life for people with sickle cell. Historically, have sickle cell anemia patients gotten the treatment that they need?
Absolutely not. Sickle cell disease is characterized by pervasive and longstanding disparities in health resources as well as health outcomes. So as Dr. Walters mentioned, a health outcome disparity is the decreased life expectancy, Another health outcome disparity is that patients have the highest readmission rate to the hospital and multiple complications. People haven't gotten the care that they need because of health resource disparities, where many of the patients are on Medicaid, which isn't accepted by all providers. They have longer wait times in the emergency department because of misconceptions that they are drug seekers and doubts about the severity of their pain. And particularly for adults, there is a very limited supply of physicians who can care for adult patients who are knowledgeable and really want to care for patients with sickle cell disease.
Yeah. So obviously we hope that this trial or something else actually leads to a cure. But in the meantime, what needs to change in sickle cell care, just sort of generally, assuming that, you know, we're still some ways away from a cure?
There really needs to be an improvement in recognition of the need for improved quality of life for people with sickle cell disease, again, particularly for adults. So providers need to look at their implicit biases that do come into play when they take care of people who are primarily African-American. And again, that lead to these ideas that the patients are not as in severe pain as they say or are drug seeking. Also, we really do need more, not just caring providers, but knowledgeable providers. So there need to be providers who want to commit to learning more about the disease and providing the best standards of care. Now, what we've been able to do here in California is work together in a partnership with the community. So people with sickle cell disease, community-based organizations, researchers, clinicians have all gotten together, created a California Sickle Cell Action Plan, and in fact secured funding through the governor's budget to begin to train more adult providers, increase access to care for adults with sickle cell disease, and really implement these standard of care guidelines that will improve quality of life.
Yeah. You know, I just wanted to think about the intersection between the opioid epidemic and sickle cell. And I'm guessing that because we actually do have people who are seeking drugs because of this epidemic in opioid use, that it has made life harder for sickle cell patients to get the actual medications that they need.
That is absolutely the case. But what CDC did in response to people with sickle cell disease having more trouble, even more trouble than historically, in accessing opioids, was to put forward a statement that individuals with sickle cell disease are not more likely to, they are not at increased risk of addiction to opioids. In fact, they published data that showed that people with sickle cell disease do not have a higher rate of addiction to opioids compared to all other non-cancer pain conditions.
Yeah. Dr. Walters, if you have a patient with sickle cell from a very young age, what are the kinds of treatments that you can deploy to sort of keep the disease from causing this deterioration in their bodies? While also, you know they're going to be taking these things for a long time, and so that itself can cause problems.
Right. There's a dual-edged approach. The first is preventive care. So it's educating families about common complications, like a risk of certain kinds of infection, what to do to keep a patient at a good temperature to avoid temperature extremes that might cause a sickling event, and just general guidance about how to take care of children as they transition from adolescence into adulthood. The second part that has really changed the practice is the early institution of disease modifying therapy. So of interest, for many, many years, there was only one FDA-approved therapy, a drug called hydroxyurea. And it's an important therapy because it lessens the amount of pain that's experienced and it reduces the time spent in hospital. And also, if taken properly for many, many years, extends lifespan. Hmm. So now we try to institute that drug very early.
And that's actually addressing the disease itself, not just the sort of symptoms of the disease.
Yes, that's right. So more recently, there have been three new FDA-approved drugs that are also being instituted in ways that improve the spectrum of symptoms and potentially lifespan.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about the new work now, using CRISPR as a gene editing tool to perhaps cure sickle cell. For those who haven't been following the biotechnology news, can you just give us a little backgrounder on how CRISPR is used and might be used in this case?
Sure. Well, the CRISPR gene editing tools are composed of two basic components, and a third that we've added to elicit a change in the DNA sequence that causes sickle cell disease. It involves joining a protein, an enzyme that cuts the DNA into two pieces, and the cell very quickly wants to repair that cut so that it can continue the cell cycle. The second part is what we call an RNA, a guide RNA, that's like the spell checker that brings that cutting enzyme into close proximity to the mutation that we want to correct. And the third component is an extra piece of DNA that has the corrected sequence. So it becomes the template that then lays down a new strand of DNA that doesn't have the sickle mutation. And after completion of this, assuming that the cell survives all these perturbations, which most of the time it does, it now is a stem cell that will produce blood cells in the circulation that won't have sickle hemoglobin. It'll have regular healthy hemoglobin.
So you'll take the bone marrow out from patients. You'll apply this CRISPR fix, this knock-in of a functional copy of the gene, and then you'll put it back into patients. That's right? That's kind of the core operation?
That's correct. But each of those procedures is arduous and requires time spent in hospital and in the clinic. While this has the potential to be a universal treatment cure, if you will, we're a long distance from that because there are several important improvements that must occur.
Yeah. Dr. Treadwell, have there been other potential cures or treatments that would radically improve life that haven't worked out? And if so, how do you work with families to help them understand how to calibrate their hope?
Well, Dr. Walter's work over the years has really refined the approach in terms of bone marrow transplantation, which would be transplantation from a donor. And the issues with that are that many individuals do not have a matched donor, so they simply aren't eligible for that treatment. The other issue is that, as similar to the gene therapy, there is a time in hospital and there is a risk that patients accept as they undergo the therapies to be able to obtain the bone marrow transplantation. So what we do is really the process of informed consent for such a process is long and a real back and forth dialogue mm-hmm. to understand, what is the risk for me and my family now and for the future. And just, a conversation, it really requires trust between mm-hmm. the physician and the patient as they go through this dialogue. And so your question about, how do we help people who are facing a hard decision and then further who may have, aren't eligible for it. Mm. And really, we really work with people to understand that there are things they can do to improve their quality of life in the meantime, while they're awaiting a cure, or it's important for them to maintain their health mm-hmm. so that, when a cure is more widely available, they will be eligible for it and can benefit from it and not have so much organ damage.
Yeah. We're talking about a new sickle cell trial at UCSF. Joining us are Marcia Treadwell, psychologist at UCSF Benioff Children's Hospital, and Mark Walters, professor of pediatrics at UCSF. What are your questions about sickle cell disease or about the new trial? Give us a call now, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can get in touch in all the other ways to forum at kqed.org. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for more after the break.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're learning about sickle cell disease, why it's only now gaining much-needed research attention, and a new gene editing trial in the works with the potential to cure the disease. We're joined by Marcia Treadwell, a psychologist at UCSF Benioff Children's Hospital, who also directs the Sickle Cell Care Coordination Initiative here in Northern California. Mark Walters, professor of pediatrics at UCSF, who's also lead scientist on the sickle cell trial. And we now are joined by Brooklyn Haynes. She's a 26-year-old sickle cell patient at UCSF since she was 2 months old. Welcome to the show, Brooklyn.
Hey, good morning. How are you guys?
Good, good. Are you feeling okay? I know you're joining us like from a procedure right now. Everything okay there?
I'm literally in the middle of getting a blood exchange as we speak right now. So I'm doing okay this morning, but we're moving.
Yeah. What does that do for you to get that blood exchange?
The blood exchange, basically, they take out my sickle cell blood and they give me about 3 to 4 units of non-sickle cell blood. So it kind of helps eliminate all the pain that I go through on a daily basis, but it only does so much.
Mm-hmm. And how long does that like make you feel better for?
Honestly, probably about 2 weeks.
Mm. Wow. So can you tell us just, you know, what's it feel like? Like, I've tried to imagine reading about it, and I watched a great video of you talking about it. What does it feel like inside your body when you start to feel one of these pain episodes coming on?
Like, literally, I feel really weak because my hemoglobin starts to drop, which causes my blood to fill up even more really badly. So I feel literally like my bones are breaking, like almost like I have like a rusty saw sawing in my bones and like a hammer hitting it. And it's like, it just won't stop. And it's a pain that you just want to stop, but it just won't. It's in your blood. You can literally feel like the sickle flowing through your blood. It's painful. I can't walk. It's hard to get out of bed. It's really bad. At one point I had to like teach myself how to walk all over again, like some years ago. So.
Oh my God. Because you hadn't been able to move for a while? Or like
I haven't been able to move, and the pain, it's just like you're not able to really use your joints like that. The sickling for me mostly happens in my back and my legs, and it's just really hard to walk because the pain is just so bad. It's like bone-breaking, constant, throbbing pain.
Oh, man. And it's been that way through your whole life? So when you were like 5 years old, you can remember that and like, you know, up to now?
Yes. When I was 5 years old, I had my first recollection of a pain crisis. Elevation also is a trigger for sickle cell. And I was sleeping in the back seat of the car. And I just really remember waking up screaming and crying and wondering like why my body is attacking me at 5 years old. It was really scary.
Oh, man. I mean, how has it affected, you know, you're only 26. I mean, how has this affected just, you know, doing the normal stuff of life, you know, getting a job, going out into the world?
At first, when you're 18 and you go out into the field, you think it's going to be all roses and daisies. But as soon as you get fired for missing so many days of work, reality kind of sets in and it's just like, okay, this disease is taking a toll on not just my body, but my social life as well, my working life. I haven't been able to work a job in more than 4 years. Mm-hmm. So definitely struggling financially for me is definitely, it's mm-hmm. taken a toll now since it's the holidays. Mm-hmm. I'm not able to get anything for my family that I want like everybody else can. So it's definitely taken a toll on my body and my finances.
Yeah. What's your care been like? Like, do you feel like you've had the care that you needed or that could make it as good as it could be?
Oh, at UCSF, I love it over there. When I was a kid, going to the hospital for me was a problem, but then also it was like, oh, I get to see all my nurses and doctors. I'm so excited. Go to the playroom. But then as I've become an adult, it's been very challenging. I'm looked at as more of a drug seeker now. I'm looked at as more as why is she here so frequently. It's mm-hmm. not a pleasant. I have friends that have sickle cell, and that literally have a little bit of PTSD given from the ER doctors. Like, they're crying and shaking just at the thought of going to the ER. Not every sickle cell patient is strong and able to literally go through all that adversity and look at differently.
Yeah.
And some of them can't take it, and they break. They really break in half. You have to learn how to be strong when not everybody can be strong.
Oh, man. So, I mean, when you go in, doctor takes a look or the nurse takes a look at your chart, they see you have sickle cell anemia just like they would see your friends, and yet they're still treat you like you're seeking drugs?
Yes.
Yeah. Gosh.
Constantly they do. Constantly. It's also, it's an issue. They don't even really look at my chart. Literally 2 days ago, I went to the ED and the doctor did not want to follow my pain plan. And then finally, my lab come back and they come in the room and it's like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't believe that you were in pain. And now it's just, yeah, it's horrible. They're like, oh, you're here for pain meds? I'm like, no, I'm here for you to help me get out of pain so I can go home.
Mm-hmm. What about this new trial? Is this something that you're interested in and would like to try to, you know, seek a more permanent cure?
Definitely. When they first introduced the CRISPR gene therapy to me and kind of broke it down, I was really excited. I was like, this is overdue. I'm excited. Sign me up. I'm ready for it. But then it's also a little bit nerve-wracking because it's like I told my grandmother, like, imagine being healthy for all of these years and then you end up getting, like, cancer or something. And then it's like, oh, my gosh, I don't know what to do. And I told her it's almost like sickle cell has become a part of my identity for all of these years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at this point, this is all that I know. And I'm excited for the cure, but then it's also like I'm not going to be able to see, like, Dr. Treadwell or, you know, like my nurses and doctors that I've grown up. They are a vital part of my life.
Yeah. You know, Brooklyn, we're going to let you let you go. You can maybe can hang around in case people have questions for you. But I know that you're okay. You are in the middle of a procedure. So thank you so much for joining us, kind of sharing this experience and breaking my heart just hearing how hard it is. It sounds really, really, really hard. Thank you.
Well, thank you for listening. That means like so much to me.
Yeah. You know, Dr. Treadwell, Brooklyn shouted you out as someone who'd been a key part of her treatment. And I just, as you were listening to her talk and describe those challenges, I mean, these are things that you're hearing every day from families.
Absolutely. And Brooklyn really put it so well. You know, it's traumatic. It's traumatic to experience pain from such an early age. Often without warning. I mean, people can control their triggers sometimes, but sometimes it just happens. And then it's also traumatic to come to the hospital. And that's an area that's not really recognized sometimes by providers that, again, I appreciate Brooklyn talking about resilience. Mm-hmm. People with sickle cell disease go through so much, but they have demonstrated such resilience. They deserve so much respect. And yet, societal view, you know, where you couple structural racism, interpersonal racism, and the fact that the disease primarily affects, in this country, African-Americans, just really brings together all these factors that lead to this negative experience. And it is heartbreaking, but I just appreciate that having worked with Brooklyn since she was a baby and others, the resilience and people deserve more respect than they really get in the medical setting.
And man, you just gotta, I mean, I'm just asking myself, like, why are we asking people who feel like their bones are breaking on the inside to be the strong ones? Like, right. Isn't that what our society is supposed to do, is to help people who need help, who are in that kind of situation? Let's bring in Michael from San Leandro. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'd like the experts to weigh in on the need for now until we get these treatments more available and equitable, the CRISPR technology in particular, about the need to recruit non-white blood donors. Mm.
Dr. Walters, what do you think? Is that one of the key needs here in the Bay Area?
Well, it is, but it's a sensitive issue. So absolutely, the matching of the red blood cell type, not just the major ABO that we're all familiar with, but there's an extended panel of proteins on the surface of a red blood cell that are important to match, because if a person with sickle cell disease who needs regular transfusions develops an immune response against those proteins on the surface, may make it very hard to give them transfusions when they need them. So as it turns out, those what we call minor antigens, they're inherited similarly among ethnic groups. So getting broad participation, not just in blood donations, but also stem cell donations like the National Marrow Donor Program is very important to expanding access to care that's very important to deliver.
Yeah. Dr. Treadwell, is that something that you work with the community through the sickle cell care coordination initiatives to try and sort of build up that that base of people who can be prospective donors?
Absolutely. We really have some excellent community-based organization partners in the Bay Area. So we have SC101, Executive Director Cassandra Trumnell, the Sickle Cell Anemia Awareness Foundation of San Francisco, Executive Director Nadina Brox-Kapla, and then the Sickle Cell Care Coordination, Sickle Cell Community Advisory Council, and Wanda Williams is the chair of that. So they do put out calls for blood donations, and particularly the program in San Francisco, they will offer blood drives and just encourage the community to come together. And that's the real key, is raising awareness in the community of the need for blood donations, just again in general, but also that it really does show people with sickle cell disease that the community cares and is supportive. Sickle cell is a hidden disease. You can't look at someone and know that they have sickle cell disease. So these awareness events really help people with sickle cell disease to feel that they are cared for, and that there are those who know about what they're going through and are going to do something about it.
Yeah. You know, to that point, we have a few questions, comments from listeners that are about, basic questions about sickle cell. Sean writes, and maybe Dr. Walters will go to you on this. Sean writes, it seems so prevalent in our population that I wonder whether there's some evolutionary purpose to the sickle cell mutation. As I understand it, it's around malaria, right?
That's right. And for reasons that aren't even today completely understood, there's something about having the trait condition that enables a person who's infected with malaria to clear the infection faster in the absence of anti-malarial drugs. So even today in areas of the world where malaria is endemic, there's still having the trait exerts a strong natural history on keeping the mutation, this allele in the population.
Yeah. Michael tweets, a coworker had it. She desperately wanted to have a child and picked a father with neither Black nor Mediterranean ancestry to make sure she didn't pass it on. Her beautiful older sister had passed away while she was still in her 20s. She herself lived into her 50s. Question there, Dr. Walt, is just about how this disease is passed and the hereditary conditions there, as Michael was indicating.
Right. Well, so it's a recessive trait. So having at least one copy of a healthy gene largely protects you from the disease. So for any two parents who carry the trait, there's a 1 in 4 likelihood that one of the children will develop sickle cell anemia, which is having two copies of the sickle trait. So right, if a person has sickle cell disease and has a baby, they will pass on half of their children, assuming the partner doesn't have trait or the disease, will pass on that gene to half of the children.
Are there genetic tests available like there are for like the BRCA and which predisposes people to breast cancer?
Yes, these are readily available. So you can test the type of hemoglobin that's in the circulation, and that will give you a pretty good idea of whether or not a person has trait or disease. But it's also possible now to do the DNA sequence test and confirm by genotyping what the genotype is.
One more caller, David from San Francisco. Welcome to the show.
Oh, yeah, morning. Years ago, the medical schools would admit people that were interested in certain specialties. And as I understand it, in corporate medicine nowadays, they're becoming orphan diseases, where the med schools aren't really admitting enough students to deal with certain types of diseases. And so there are fewer specialists to go around. And I'm just wondering if sickle cell, I heard somebody comment about white people curing people for a black disease. Are the medical schools intentionally not admitting enough doctors? Because I remember this issue showed up 40 years ago in the early 1980s. About whether the med schools were admitting enough doctors interested in sickle cell.
Yeah. So, Mark Walters, are there enough doctors who are being trained and going into these blood disorders like sickle cell?
Yeah, that's a great point, and probably not. I think that and this is an ongoing challenge for medical schools and for academic medical centers in general, where there's a disparity in representation. That is, the ethnic and racial makeup of the faculty doesn't match the makeup of the population at large. So there's this, so underrepresented in medicine is a term that we use a lot, and it's something that we're trying to tackle. Now, at Children's Hospital Oakland, where I work, there's we pay a lot of attention to this, and we ensure that the proper representation is available at all levels, from leadership on down. So that's really an important process of improvement that each medical center, each medical school needs to consider and implement. With regard to the shortage of physicians, it is a problem, and there are a lot of important reasons why. I think because these are rare disorders, and the discipline that where I have training that includes oncology, cancer is a much more common problem. And so for economic reasons, there's been this shift toward the oncology aspect of hematology oncology training and less to hematology. So this is another challenge that needs to be taken up.
Yeah. Dr. Treadwell, just in our last minute here, what's for people who are listening who've been moved to want to help in some way, what's the best way for people to contribute to the care of people with sickle cell?
That is really an excellent question. I think that maintaining awareness of the disease is really important, and contributing, donating to our program here at Benioff Children's Hospital in Oakland, our comprehensive sickle cell center that's been here for over 40 years, but also the community-based organizations that I mentioned. So there's both a need for philanthropy. I think a statistic I didn't mention earlier is that if you compare like cystic fibrosis that primarily affects white people and sickle cell disease that primarily affects black people, there's like a 27-fold, if not more, disparity in funding available both from NIH as well as from philanthropy. So donate to the community-based organizations, to the Comprehensive Sickle Cell Center in Oakland, but also just show that you care. Yeah. Show people with sickle cell disease that you care.
We've been learning about sickle cell disease with Marcia Treadwell, a psychologist at UCSF. Mark Walters, a professor of pediatrics at UCSF and lead scientist on a new sickle cell trial. And we spoke earlier with Brooklyn Haynes, a 26-year-old sickle cell patient. Thank you so much to all three of you. Stay tuned for more Forum after the break.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
We've all got those parts of our house where the internet just won't go. Well, if you had wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you could worry less about dead spots. Because with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you get fast speeds, reliable connection in every room, and power for all of your devices, even when everyone's online. That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi, only with Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.